Welcome to the HMO Success Podcast. I'm your host, Wendy Whitaker-Large, and I'm here to help you create a profitable HMO portfolio. Whether you're a brand new investor or you've been at it for a number of years, my podcast is here to help you make the most from your business, whether that is starting up, scaling, or systemizing. Please hit the subscribe button to make sure you never miss an episode. And if you've got an awe-inspiring project, an inspirational investing story, or a unique approach to HMOs, I'd love to hear from you. Hello and welcome to the HMO Success Podcast. I'm your host, Wendy Whitaker-Large. And today I've got a very special guest with me because normally not seen in public, only discussed or connected to behind the scenes, we have our wonderful, and I really mean wonderful, mortgage broker, Henry Barley from Advocate Finance. Hello, Henry.
Hi, Wendy. How are you doing? You okay?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Good. Yeah, not bad at all. Thanks. I'm good.
Good. So, Henry, I'm really pleased that you could join me today. I know you've already had a very busy month, and we're not even in the middle of January. And I know things have already been busy for you, but I'm so grateful to you for coming along today and being part of this podcast. And actually, this is going to be a video recording as well, which people will be able to look at on my YouTube channel. But I'm really pleased to have you today because, first of all, I must say, from a personal point of view, you have been enormously helpful to us, growing our portfolio, enabling us to access finance, finding great deals for us in terms of financial products. So we really do value the input that you've brought and the value you've brought to our business. So really big thank you to you and also to the whole team at Advocate, who have also been in the sort of background doing things and working hard on our behalf. It would be good to get to know you a little bit, Henry. Obviously, you're the main man that we speak to, but I know you're not the only one at Advocate. There's a team there. So tell us a little bit about you. You know, why mortgage brokering? Is this your dream job or are there other things? What kind of got you to this position and what else do you do outside of work?
Well, I was always kind of, ever since I was younger, I've always played football. I was fortunate enough to be playing for Ipswich Town, which is kind of where I live, and progressed through the age groups. It was always kind of my dream, I guess, that a lot of people like me have when they're younger. I then got to the stage of being off to scholarship, so kind of full time in the building, playing football, well, at a professional club on a scholarship agreement. That then didn't end up going towards a professional contract, which is kind of the ultimate goal. So I took a step back from football. At the time, it just wasn't, I guess, kind of setbacks, etc. It just wasn't my main focus. I was fortunately blessed with a bit of intelligence as well. So I've always been, maths, I guess, was something that was always probably my strongest subject. Properties as well, just always been interested in them. And that sort of just the finance world. So that kind of, to me, made sense to go down that route. So I actually came straight out of football and have been at Advocate ever since. Met with David, the director, I've just kind of grown since then over the last five years, I think it is now.
Incredible. So how long have you been with Advocate for 5 years?
Yes, five, let me think, two, yeah, 5 years in August.
Wow, that's amazing. And you're still very young as well.
Yeah, I know. I know, still a lot to learn, but no, yeah, I know. It's been a great 5 years. I'd never thought, if you told me 5 years ago where I'd be, or what I'd be doing now, it would be this. But no, I really enjoy it and have done ever since I started, really.
Great. Well, that's tremendous to know because I suspect you probably have your fair share of frustrations as well as your fair share of wins. And while you might, celebrate with your clients when things go well, I bet you also commiserate with them when things don't go so well.
It's a journey, and ultimately we're well, with myself and the rest of the team are here to help you guys, our clients, in getting the best finance arrangements in place that meet your needs ultimately. And unfortunately, it's not always on the first try, or it's not always the way at the outset you think it's going to go. But managing those expectations, ensuring kind of you have a great level of communication with the client from the very start throughout, if bad things do happen, you don't kind of shy away, you face them and work together to find solutions. And then, as you quite rightly point out, although there are times that are difficult, you then make the most of the really great successes that you can get through property, I guess.
Yeah, that's true. And I think that working with you at Advocate, we've very much felt that you've been part of our power team. You know, that we've been able to run things past you before we've even bought them. We've said to you, Henry, do you think this will work? Do you think we could get a deal on this? You know, what's the finance like? And you've either said, well, you're only going to get 60% on that, Wendy, or yes, there's a couple of lenders, or these are the issues you're going to face. So you've always been absolutely upfront and honest with us before we've even put in an offer. And that's always been incredibly helpful to know where we stand before we even get going.
Yeah, I think touching on that as well, it's not, I mean, ultimately you yourself, clients, etc., you are the ones investing in the property, but you do, the importance of having a good team is the difference between having a really successful portfolio and maybe just a mediocre one that ticks along month by month with rents coming in. So it is very important having that team in place. It's not just advisors, builders, people that deal with tenants, the kind of the list can go on, but it is very important that team in place.
So tell me a little bit about Advocate. What do Advocate Finance specialize in?
So we specialize in all, I guess, investment property finance. We don't do any of the residential mortgages, so if you're looking to buy something and live in it yourself, that's not something that we do, although we've got all the kind of qualifications, permissions to do so. But the whole point of what we do is so that we can specialize and be experts in that market, and trying to juggle the two wouldn't really allow us to be that expert in the investment side of things. So buy to let, I guess, your standard house, flats, personal name that are rented out. Then that moves on to limited companies, similar property types. Then you kind of make a step up to HMOs, multi-unit blocks. And then we then take it kind of out of the, I guess, what you consider buy-to-let investment to the commercial space. So semi-commercial buildings, flats above shops, above restaurants, full commercial units. But I guess that's probably the majority of the term stuff. And then we do development finance, bridging finance for those auction deals, properties needing works, where there's conversions going on. We pretty much do everything on that investment property side of things, trading businesses. If it's investment based, it's kind of a case of fire it over to us and we'll try to find a solution for it.
And that's really why I think we and many other investors like working with you guys, because while some people might think, well, why don't you do residential mortgages? Actually, keeping into that niche market of investment means that not only do you have access, I think, to certain products that maybe other brokers wouldn't have, my sense of it is that you've built a very good relationship with those lenders as well. Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit more about that, Henry?
No, that's a very good point. It works in many different ways. I mean, firstly, having a good contact with those lenders means you know it speeds things up, I guess, to start things off. You know exactly what they can and can't do, the quirks that they have, the little bits of criteria that if you're not doing it day to day, it'd be impossible for you to pick up on. It also helps when, as you also pointed out, that things do go wrong, and having really good contacts within those lender with the lenders just makes finding a solution, rather than if you do hit kind of maybe a brick wall or an obstacle, rather than them saying it's not, I don't think we're going to be able to do this, and your kind of evaluation fee in, application fee in, they work with you to find a solution that ultimately it is the best case scenario for everyone. And without having contacts that kind of go right up into whether it's the bank or the lender, that makes a huge difference.
Yeah, and I've seen that before with you, a couple of cases where you've worked with us and said, well, let me speak to the lender, and the lender will literally, there must be somebody at a certain echelon where, you know, you can pick up the phone to and say, listen, we've got these, you know, we've got this block of flats, or we've got this multi-unit block, or we've got this particular project. You know, I we think you might reject it on the basis of your policy, but can I just put some, you know, good word in, or can I offer you some further information about it? And that can often change the direction, change the course of a decision, can't it?
Yeah, and that's probably one of the key things that we do with near enough all applications. We'll find everything out, well, as best as and as much as possible as we can up front before any kind of fees are incurred. So we can give the lender a really in-depth summary of what the deal is and what we're hoping to place with them. And they can then open up that conversation from there saying, yes, we could, yes, everything you've said is fine. And then obviously it becomes a discussion on if there's multiple yeses, who works best for the client. But if it's, if maybe 5 out of the 8 points raised in the referral were a fine, and then there's maybe things they can be flexible on top of that, it all then becomes a conversation prior to anybody's kind of money being put on the line, as it were, and you can have a lot of confidence proceeding with a lender that they are going to go all the way to actually completing on it, and you're not wasting anybody's time.
What about a situation where you maybe have two or three lenders that you could go to that you think are all, you know, pretty good, and they maybe the products are very, very similar? How do you, as a mortgage broker, decide, and you might want to share, or you might not want to share your own, you know, benefits that you get from working with these lenders? You know, is it true? Can I maintain my cynical view that you choose the lender because you get the best fee from them?
No.
Henry, are you going to put me right and say, no, Wendy, that's not part of our concern at all?
No. Genuinely and honestly, it really isn't. It's. I mean, you could say when you get no. From everyone, and yes, from somebody you have a great relationship with, it can be kind of, oh, well, it's the best thing for the client and also the best thing for us, then great. But ultimately, if out of everyone that can do or say they can do the deal, you work, there's whether it's the true term cost over 5 years, 2 years, what they have in the background as a lender. So it might not just be their products on day one, but can they do product switches? Can they do further advances during the term? That's probably one thing to also consider. Do they provide free valuations? Are they a really speedy lender? Is the client's ultimate goal? They're not concerned about what the rate is. They just need to do it as quickly as possible. So there's so many things on top of just the best interest rate and the best product on the face of it that has to be discussed. And ultimately that's what we do. We find out who can lend first and foremost, who can actually do this deal. You then kind of cut it down to the most competitive options. And then each lender, as you can imagine, has their own USPs, positive things about them, negative things about them. And it's just about building the relationship with the client, understanding what the key things are that they need from the finance, and then placing it based on that. Because you can't have everything. You can't have the best rate, the quickest service, the best fees, the best process post completion all the time. But if as best we can, we always try to find that solution. So no, to answer the question, the advice is certainly not based on how much the lender pays the advisor on completion.
Good, you've reassured me there, Henry. I do trust you. many wouldn't, but I do. So let's talk a bit about HMO finance, because a lot of people listening today will be particularly interested in HMOs. And this is, of course, a challenging area of lending for many different reasons. At the moment, I'd like to get your ideas, your thoughts, your views on what is the landscape at the moment for HMO borrowing, and how do you see that panning out for the rest of the year?
I think what we're seeing at the moment is HMOs and multi-unit blocks, kind of they do fit into a similar conversation, is that they are becoming much more popular because, well, quite simply, rates are higher, which means monthly payments are higher. So their clients need assets producing a higher level of income. And these HMO and multi-unit properties that can provide multiple tenancy agreements, multiple sources of income, they are becoming certainly something clients are trying to get within their portfolio. They may still have the standard units because it's probably, you could say, they're a lot easier to manage, but ultimately to be hitting those profit margins and still churning over enough of a big enough gap from monthly payment to rental income, those types of assets are certainly becoming more popular. And I think lenders are noticing that as well, because whereas maybe kind of a few years ago, there was a bit more of a gap between the rates for a standard house and the rates for a HMO, but near enough every lender does HMOs now. Likewise, near enough every lender does limited company. It's just as the market changes, the lenders have to keep up with what's going on. And we're certainly seeing, I mean, we do HMOs all the time. We do a lot of HMO conversions, so clients buying standard houses or maybe houses that they've already got and converting them to HMOs to benefit from that higher level of income.
So that's interesting, because some of the research that I've done over the last couple of years seems to show that people are exiting the HMO market. And certainly numbers in HMOs generally have actually gone down across England because of Section 24, you know, the tax implications of that. And of course, they're even more highly implicated, I suppose, through HMOs, because you only need probably two or three HMOs and potentially you're in the higher rate tax bracket straight away. So I know that lots of people have sold up. But then I have often also wondered whether those people who've been selling up may have been more old time landlords who maybe bought student properties or maybe have had their HMOs for a number of years and they've decided now's the time to retire, get out in the market, you know, travel around the world, go on a cruise type of thing. Yeah. Wouldn't we all like to do that someday? But you know, whereas perhaps younger investors are coming in and again they're looking at the profitability that you mentioned from HMOs, and perhaps they're the ones who are less able to buy cash. And so they're looking for more lending, and perhaps that's where the lending is coming from. But again, am I right? Am I wrong? What are you seeing?
I would definitely agree. It's as when thing as you get older, you then kind of the process then starts for the younger people that would be looking to invest in property. It certainly is seeming the people that are trying to build that portfolio, so they haven't got the existing portfolio, that we're finding that they're the types of clients looking for HMOs and multi-unit blocks or flats. As you say, the kind of the older portfolio landlords that maybe are looking to retire, HMO is a lot of work. It does bring the benefits of the higher rental income, but it's not quite as straightforward as one family, one tenancy agreement. They're probably going to stay in there for a long period of time. There's a lot of changeover, and it does require a lot of kind of management looking after those types of properties, which is why the new players in the market that are really looking to grow and build a portfolio, they've got the passion and the desire to work with the time and effort required. Whereas I guess people that are kind of coming towards the end of their investment in property, maybe it isn't as quite of an attractive proposition to them.
Yeah. I think you're right. There is a certain level of energy needed to set them up. And as you say, to run them as well, because they're definitely more, high management, high maintenance than a normal, you know, single buy to let property. And what do you see happening in terms of co-living? Because this is a phrase that kind of gets bandied around a little bit. And I've certainly seen people, use this phrase co-living, which is not really a kind of legal phrase. It doesn't really mean much in terms of mortgages, but do you think that's getting a bit more traction, or how is that being interpreted by lenders?
What exactly do you mean by co-living?
Well, isn't it interesting that you have to ask me? That shows to me it hasn't quite become as ubiquitous as people think. So I would interpret or sort of describe co-living as being a way in which it's like an HMO on steroids. You may have an HMO, but unlike an HMO maybe where you've got six rooms, they might all be en suite. You might have a nice big kitchen diner, and you might have, you know, a nice big living room. A co-living HMO, I think, intends to enable the tenants to have a bit more sort of close living. They perhaps have to do more activities together. It's more of a little community. And it seems to me as well that the facilities on offer are much of a higher standard and are a better quality than you would get in a normal HMO. And for that reason, I'm a bit more, I suppose, reluctant, or, you know, I've got some reservations about doing it where we invest, because we, as you know, we invest in Crewe and Stoke-on-Trent. And typically we tend to get tenants who are shift workers, or, you know, they're generally maybe on minimum wage. So I don't really feel they necessarily have a sort of cultural desire to kind of, you know, spend time with their co-tenants. I just don't really get that feeling. Perhaps some of them do, but many of them, I think, have got their own lives. They keep themselves to themselves. That, you know, it's work, rest and play, and they're not into this kind of co-living thing. But I know maybe in other parts of the country, maybe in certain cities or in the south, there's definitely more of a kind of move to that more communal type living. That's how I would describe it.
So I guess from our side of things, we wouldn't get too involved in post mortgage. So in terms of who's actually in the tenants and how they live on a day-to-day basis, we probably wouldn't see too much. So it could well be that a lot of our clients, the tenants that they have in place, do live maybe like that. What I would say from what we do see ourselves is the quality and the standard that the HMOs are being converted to and being put on the market is much higher and is gradually getting higher and higher over the years. I guess living standards anyway, that ultimately you've got to look at properties and think, I'm renting this out to people, would I live in it myself? So I would say the quality of HMOs is definitely increasing. And then I guess part and part with that is you're going to probably have people paying a higher rental income to paying a higher rent to stay there, which could it could therefore mean that they are maybe seeing it as more somewhere to stay slightly longer term and building relationships with other people in that property. But it's hard for me to say really if how much of it we see, because as not directly investing in properties, it's hard to say how the tenants are actually living. But
clearly from a mortgage point of view, you're it's kind of irrelevant. It's more the bricks and mortar of the property. How big is it? What work has been done to it? What quality standards does it have? Does it meet all the regulations? Do you have all the certificates in place?
Yeah.
That's kind of what you're looking for, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. The way, obviously, the client themselves does their own due diligence on tenants going in. But from our side of things, as you say, as long as all the whether it's needing building control sign off, building regulations, the standard itself, meeting HMO regulations, they're all the things that we look at. In terms of boosting valuations, do all rooms have an ensuite? What I would say we're seeing slightly more of is almost kind of bed sits, where they've got their own small cooking facilities, kind of like kitchenettes in all the rooms. We're seeing slightly more of that than we would have done before. But I think in general, just the quality of the, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of our clients and a lot of the HMO business we see comes from the very outset of it just being standard house. So we see it from before HMO and after. So the conversions and the quality of these properties is definitely very high. And I think the other thing on top of that is that there a lot of investors going for HMOs do want to push for commercial valuations where they can, based on that because it's generating higher income, there are certain ways you can kind of do the works and structure the HMO itself to help and with that.
So that is a very important point. And I know lots of people will be listening thinking, yes, right, give me the insider knowledge on this one, Andy. And I bet this is a question you must get asked every day, seven times a week or more. So can you tell us those insider tips that can help to get a commercial valuation?
A HMO with seven beds or more is always going to receive a commercial valuation because of the change in planning sui generis for HMOs with more than seven beds and above. They're those types of HMOs are always going to receive commercial valuation. So this question ultimately refers to, and we get, as you mentioned, a lot of questions about it. But a commercial valuation on a six-bed HMO or five-bed or four-bed, people even ask about. And it is possible, but there are, as you say, there are a few things to point out. The first one being, I would say at least five bedrooms, anything below that. Because of how, it's an expensive valuation if it's a commercial report, and a four-bed, I don't think we've seen one that's had a commercial valuation. I'd have to check, but it's very rare, so it's not often worth doing a commercial report on a HMO of that size. So five or six bedrooms at least, all of them ideally, or at least kind of four out of six to be en suite. So either kind of, if it's six, at least four of them, and then maybe the other two share a bathroom. But ideally, to really push that commercial valuation, we'd want to see all of the bedrooms to have ensuite facilities. And also, it definitely helps if they've been recently converted. You do still maybe somebody that's had a six bed HMO for a while, they've been on a 5 year fix, come to the end of the 5 years, and they're looking for a commercial valuation. You still do have that potential, but I guess it's just slightly outdated in terms of what it's looking like. It's not brand new, but I wouldn't say that's too much of a problem. The other thing that we always say is to have it fully tenanted on the day of the valuation, because it just gives the valuer, it makes it a lot more difficult for them to disagree with what that market rent is, because ultimately the commercial report is working off the rental income being received. So down valuation on the rent means a down valuation on the property itself. So having it fully tenanted is definitely a very important part of the process. But with any conversion or works to a property, not just HMO, new kitchen, new bathroom, that's something that valuers and lenders always point out as increasing your chances of a better valuation. But going back to specifically HMO, I'd say minimum five bedrooms, all en suite if possible. We have had a few that, as I mentioned, four, not all of them, but near enough, there or thereabouts, have had en suite facilities, and then having it fully tenanted on the day of the inspection.
Okay, that's really helpful. What about situations where somebody is buying maybe a secondhand HMO in order to refurbish it? Would you recommend that they do that on bridging, and then once they've done the refurb, put it onto a term product?
Yes, probably. The thing is, because it's a purchase, they're probably not purchasing it based off the commercial valuation, so they don't require that at the outset. So a lender will only provide finance based on the lower, well, in most cases they'll only provide finance based on the lower of the purchase price or the valuation. So even if it gets valued at 350 and you're purchasing at 315, it'll be the finance provided. As I say, for most situations will be that they'd be lending off 315. So going back to your point, if it was the intention that works were going to be done to the property, we'd always say to benefit from that increase in value once the work's complete, doing it on a bridging loan and then refinancing it once the work's complete would be the, for most situations, would be the best thing to do. As I say, things can differ from case to case, but more often than not, to be able to pull out the money that you've invested on the works, on the new value, bridging it while those works are carried out, avoids the early repayment charges that you'd have if you bought it straight at kind of outright on a long-term mortgage.
What about working with surveyors? Because, you know, we've had a situation where one of our HMOs was valued by one surveyor, really with a what I would call a down valuation. We brought in a different company that got valued, and it was a totally different kettle of fish. And suddenly, you know, the property's worth £50,000 more or £100,000 more than it was first time round. First of all, how do you explain that? And secondly, what can people do if they are looking to get those better valuations?
So, yeah, I guess it's hard to explain because we get the reports coming in and think, God, how's that happened? But ultimately, for a HMO, down valuations, they tend to be because that valuer has just applied no kind of investment evaluation to it, and it's very much bricks and mortar. And that then kind of, not only is it just the firm itself, because you can, from experience, you do come across certain firms that just you try to stay clear of, because you know that they're not the best at really maximizing valuations for certain property types. So that is one thing. And then just with the actual criteria of the lender, they give the valuer kind of a list of things that they want considered in the report, and it may be that they want their HMOs valued as completely bricks and mortar. And I think we've used, for yourself, there are lenders that specifically can instruct commercial reports on small HMOs. I don't think I pointed that out earlier. It's not standard for lenders to do that, and there's the standard way for a HMO to be valued, if it's a small HMO, is kind of what they call a hybrid report, which doesn't always, I would say more often than not, comes out on a bricks and mortar basis than it does with any kind of investment value added to it. So it also comes down to which lender you use.
Yes, of course. And can you influence the surveyor that is chosen? Is it possible to say, oh, I know, I've used him before, I don't want him, or to find out who's on that panel and, you know, choose your surveyor?
Yeah, so that's, yes, again, lender dependent on the lender. But that's what you would do in that instance. You use a certain company, they use their own valuation firm. The valuation doesn't come back very well. You just have to make sure you then, if a client wants to finance it with somebody else because they're adamant that they're not happy with that report and think it should be better, you just use a different firm that doesn't use that same valuation company. In terms of how there's a fair few now, and that you can get a choice of the actual value. They'll send you quotes, usually three quotes from three different firms. And that's probably another tip in terms of getting a good report on a HMO. If you're using one of those lenders, you can actually call them up, so you get the three quotes back. And what we've been saying is, why don't you call them up, discuss your property with them, what you've done, the purchase price, the works, etc., and you can get a pretty good indication of what they're going to value it at, or a good feeling from those conversations. And we've had that recently. I can't remember the firm, but they basically discussed the HMO with them. They were hoping for a value of about 230. They obviously, there's only so much a surveyor can say. I don't know what the conversation goes like exactly, because it's not us doing it, but they confirmed that, yeah, you're kind of on the right lines. And it came back at, out of the three that they spoke to, they gave them, well, what they thought would be the best reassurance, and it came in at 235, so 5,000 higher than they were estimating. So that's just one example of kind of how it can work.
Great, that's really helpful. So it sounds like you're very positive about 2024. Just very briefly, Henry, what do you see happening on mortgages as a whole through this coming year?
So as you say, we're very positive about 2024. 2023, although it was a difficult mark from a rates perspective, but we kind of weren't any less busy than normal, I'd say. There's still plenty of properties and people buying, etc. But for 2024, I think the main difference is going to be the rates available. We're only 9 days into January, and lenders have already kind of reduced their products by kind of up to almost 1% from their rates in December to their rates now. As I say, have reduced by kind of 0.8 or a whole percent, and that's only 9 days into the year. So we're very positive about the market in general. Also semi-commercial and commercial. We also, I think there's, although that's been limited for kind of larger properties, some kind of minimum loan sizes of 250, 350 and above. I think there's also going to be some good competitiveness in that area of the market as well. I do just think in general, things are going to improve over the course of 2024. And that's what we hope for anyway.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a case of staying in touch with what's going on in the wider picture. Obviously, you're doing that all the time anyway. So, Henry, thank you very, very much indeed today. It's been absolutely great to have you on the webinar, and I really appreciate your thoughts, your feedback, your insight as well. I know that if somebody's listening today and they're thinking about investing in HMOs, or maybe they're going through a program of renovation or refurbishment at the moment, I'm sure they're going to want to add your details to their book, their calendar, their diary, and make contact with you. So we'll obviously add your details at the end of the podcast. Just very briefly, can you just give us are you available Monday to Friday, 9 to 5? What are your opening hours? When's the best time to contact you?
Yeah, so as you say, we're not open weekends, but Monday to Friday, pretty much bang on 9 to 5. In terms of the company itself, we do have the kind of, we mix from being in the office and at home. But that doesn't kind of change from a client's point of view. It's 9 to 5, Monday to Friday. Obviously they're going to have calls arranged, etc. But we'd always, one of our kind of key things is trying to always get back to clients as quickly as we possibly can, and also speak to clients as quickly as we can about new inquiries, existing cases. So I would say that the best way to find out is give me a ring, send me an email, put aside some time, and we can have a conversation.
And if they can't catch you in the office, they can see you playing football probably many nights a week as well.
Yeah. Yes, they can, in the cold and wet at the moment.
Yes. Well, hopefully that will improve too as the year goes on. Great. Well, listen, thank you so much, Henry. It's been great to speak to you today. We had a few technical problems halfway through, but we've managed to overcome them. And I'm looking forward to maybe in another few months' time having you on again. We can assess where we're up to in the market, and there's a lot more. And what I would say is, if you're listening to this today and you've got some questions that you'd like me to put to Henry, perhaps later in the year when we do another session, please feel free to message me or email me. If you've enjoyed this, please subscribe, please share with one other person who you think would benefit, and please do add Henry to your contact database, because you just never know when you might need your next HMO mortgage, and he's the man.
Thanks, Wendy.
Great. Thank you very much indeed, Henry. Great to have you on.
Have you decided that 2024 is the year when you need to start, scale, or systemize your HMO portfolio? Well, in that case, I've got great news for you, because I'm running 2 brand new HMO Discovery Days in person, one on the 27th of January in Birmingham and one on the 24th of February in London. I would love to see you there. For an investment of just £99 plus VAT, you'll get to learn my full 5-step system, just as many other people have done before. And I'm going to be sharing stories of how they are now creating thousands of pounds extra income per month by applying what they've learned. The day is jam-packed, full of activities, exercises, and tools to enable you to go away immediately and start finding your very first deal. If you've already got HMOs and you now want to scale and systemize, there'll be tools to allow you to do that too. This is an event that you simply don't want to miss. Contact us now to reserve your place for either the 27th of January or the 24th of February. Whichever venue you choose, make sure you make 2024 an unforgettable year. Thank you for listening to the HMO Success Podcast. If you'd like to know more about how you can create a profitable HMO business, please visit our website, hmosuccess.co.uk, to find out more. We have plenty of free tools and information for you there, and also on our Facebook group, The Ultimate HMO Success System. We look forward to connecting with you very soon. Thanks for listening.